and welcome to episode 291 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666 and Murder Road, and joining me, in, as always, are the creator of Viper and the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
One half of the team that recently received an 11 o'clock, Tony Esmond.
Yes, I'd like to point out it's an award given to favourite issues of a comic. So I can actually admit to this one, because I've been ragging on award shows all week. It's it's very, very cool. Thank you very much for mentioning it.
Yeah, Tony's in a good mood this week.
Yes, yes.
Well, we're always in a good mood, because normally we're joined by great comic guests, and this week is no different. This week we're joined by the creator of the gastronomical comic book series about martial arts, processed food, and the power of farts that is known as Bumstorm. It's our pleasure to welcome Rob Luckett to the show. Hello, sir.
Hello, I'm going to apologise up front. This is going to go off the rails real quick because we're just the title alone is like, what are we in for?
It always has. It already has. It just, I don't know if Vince was recording it. It'll make it into the extras, but it's already gone off the rails.
I'm going to have to go through those outtakes to see what I can use and what I can't use. So stay tuned for after the episode.
Think of his sales.
the more incendiary I get, that's going to start us off wrong. If it's like, just say terrible stuff, Rob, and you know,
that's the dream.
People start buying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an all ages kids book as well.
It's I like to lean on the sort of all ages side, in that, you know, dads definitely enjoy it, mums as well. But like, it's written to a level that kids, you know, aren't going to be waking up with nightmares.
Hopefully not. I mean, if they listen to this show, they'll probably have nightmares. But so we're going to be talking about the book, Rob's work, and like that sort of humour and that side of comics, because we've talked about kids' books and all ages books before. But Bumstorm, I'm never going to tire of saying that title. This is going to be the best episode title ever. It caters to that genre of sort of all ages and humour comics, which is huge. And an enormous part of comics, so we'll get to that soon enough, and I'm hugely looking forward to it, as well as I don't know how the rest of this show's going to go. It's going to be hilarious, people. So buckle up, because it's going to be a laugh, right? Do you know what's not a laugh, right? Do you know what's serious business, though, guys?
Oh God, I don't know.
It's Comic House.
Yes, it's all those amazing books that you can find on Comic House, our lovely sponsor. I don't know why I made such a serious tone then.
You can get humorous comics on there.
You can.
Other genres.
You can get all kinds of comics on Comic House. They're an indie comic marketplace on comichouse.com. Already there is a huge selection of titles on the database. Lots of creators who self-published list their book on there and start selling straight away. And they have an app which is being added to all the time. So if you want to read your comics on the go, or if you can't make it to a comic book shop, digital comics are becoming more prevalent more than ever. And thankfully, Comic House has you covered in terms of indie books, because I don't know about you, but I'm reading more indie books than any other sort of publisher. I probably have been I probably have been for the past since this show's started. It's changed my sort of reading habits, but now I'm almost exclusively indie. And something like, if you want to discover loads of books, Comic House is a great place to go. Being added to all the time. What stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got And It Snowed, Little Sally issue
very
1 and 2. Riders of the Apocalypse Volume 1, Sketchbook 1, The Awesome Drinker Draw, and Galaxy Grappling Alliance Volume 1, Issue 2.
Good. At least a couple of our pals there, aren't there? That's good.
Yeah. And many more.
And
It Snows really rings a bell. I'm looking at the cover and I'm like, I think I might have read this.
That's Nick Bryan, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah.
And off the top of my head, Robert Ahmed.
You're right.
Good shout. God. Look at that.
And I spoke to Nick about that book and much more in our Thought Bubble special, which was the last time you heard Rob's voice as well.
Ever.
Well, not
I've been living in a cave since.
Yeah.
Just like not emerging.
That was a couple of months ago.
It was a couple of months ago when we tried our experiment to sort of like do a cheeky test to see which people we liked talking to.
Rob, sorry to interrupt, but Rob, do you mean you don't have, you're a comics maker and you don't have your own podcast?
I'm a male, I'm a white male with a voice, so it's sort of like, it's got to get out there somehow.
It'll be anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the YouTube channels now, Tony.
That's is that what it is? Doing. Is that what the kids are into, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. YouTubes.
Yeah. YouTube and Twitch.
Youtubes. Oh, the Twitch, yeah, that's true.
Though YouTube and Twitch either sounds like an early 90s video game or pop group of some kind.
We've like got to stop the OnlyFans jokes because virtually everyone's on OnlyFans now. So it's kind of like...
Are they? Is that a thing now, is it?
Yeah, apart from the fans.
I can't
most
seem to
of my street
into...
is...
Oh, they. I can't get. I seem to can't seem to get into my Parler account. I don't know what's happened.
Most of your street is. Did you say, Dan?
Yeah,
we'll come back.
Would you live in Amsterdam?
We'll come back. Well, we're going to come back to that because that's. I need to know more.
All
about
down the road.
In their windows, beckoning tourists.
If you want to find
over.
Out, if you're listening to me, if you're out there, if you can hear me. And you're not listening to the other two who are trying to put me off this sponsorship ad. For £3 a month, you can get a subscription to Comic House. There's a 14-day free trial, and you can literally just log in, sign up, and just delve into the world of indie comics that we talk about every week. Also, if you're an indie creator, put your books on there. You know,
yes,
it's a great place to have them. Yeah, it won't take long. We've all got PDFs lying around. Some of them have comics. So we might as well put them somewhere. Mm. Yes, check out comichouse.com. Now, Dan, your life. What's this about OnlyFans?
It's just... There was like an article saying that basically like, there's so many people putting stuff up on OnlyFans now that it's kind of... No one can make any money out of it.
That's the same. So all these sort of poor ladies with big tits can't actually afford to pay the mortgage and not pay any taxes on it, you mean?
Yeah, because there's so many people on there that there's only so much... Oil in the well, shall we say.
Yeah. It's a bit of a long-form con job, isn't it? You know?
I don't understand it all. I'm a very simple man. I keep things very simple and basic. I don't put sugar on my Weetabix. No, I do. I put loads of men joking.
Last time I checked, I've run this past show expert Tony. There's quite a lot of pornography that's free on the internet.
Is it really?
Yeah, there's quite a lot.
I've heard so.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's the equivalent marketing, doesn't it? Like, they've sort of, like, got in there. It's like, this is the only way you're going to see tits today. It's like, is it? They've actually convinced people.
I can look in the mirror. Like,
Yeah. Getting at that age.
It's the equivalent
of... Like, hands on the top of your mirror and just sort of, like, pose provocatively.
You know? I don't suppose you guys are all too young, but I remember when I was in the sixth form, we all went to see Starlight Express. And as soon as... Right, it goes on from it. That's not the whole anecdote. And the curtains went up, and me and three mates all fucked off to Soho. Do you know how many as you do? Because it was just behind the theatre.
Yeah.
And we all piled into one of those peep shows, and we put like the equivalent of about £4 in the slot, you know. And up pops this slot, and all of us are in there going like that. And the woman sort of appears and begins to take her bra off, and then the slot drops down again, and you've got to put another £4 or something in it. Oh. And that's the equivalent of the OnlyFans, isn't it?
Well, yeah. The sort of thing, the precursor to the internet porn industry was the fact that old creepy men used to hide porn mags in the forest. And it sort of like warms the heart, but sort of like makes you sad in a weird way that's gone away. Those people have been robbed of the whole reason to exist was to hide porn in the forest, like some kind of adult tooth fairy, sort of like, oh, that's the man that hides porn, isn't it?
That noble tradition is gone.
It's comparable to comics. Comics are so free to download now. That's why people ain't buying them.
Started with... cavemen taking out naughty slabs of stone into the woodlands.
Naughty slabs.
Naughty carvings. And
if
then
there's nothing, I mean, parchments. That's a wonderful combination of words, Dan.
It starts off when somebody puts it, you know, they put their hands together and splay the fingers and say, do this. And then you open your hand and it's meant to look like a vagina. I never really thought it did, though. I don't think that counts, does it?
I tell you what, guys. Kids comics.
Oh, God.
I know.
Last week.
I might as well just go now. I think I better go. I think it's...
Kids comics.
Oh, dear. Well, Rob did warn you. Rob warned you.
Yeah.
Yes. And obviously, occasionally we like to sort of revisit the world of all ages comics and stuff. And I know online, certainly in our WhatsApp group, we've been talking about how comics are marketed and where there's an audience for comics now. Because sometimes you look at the numbers and the numbers aren't there for a lot of titles that you think are huge, but where the numbers are big are with the next generation of readers and the kids and stuff. And there's a side, some of the books that are most popular with kids, let's cut straight to it. It's toilet humour. If you listen to this show, you're familiar with it.
You know we don't approve.
We don't approve of such filth, and we've basically brought Rob on to chastise him for 2 hours.
Yeah, I'll take the brunt of it. I'm to blame.
Yeah. But saying that, it's a hugely popular. I mean, it's almost like no one likes to talk about, like, you know, the popular sort of. I mean, when you're a kid, you like bogies, farts, you know, gunge, all of that sort of stuff. And it's not really. It's not promoted. You know, it's not. You don't really see much of it. Or perhaps I'm missing it. Perhaps I'm missing this sort of toilet humour genre of kids' comics. I mean, Dan, do you see? I mean, what are you seeing? I mean, Dexter.
Well, he absolutely devoured Bumstorm, Rob. He's really into Dragon Ball at the moment. Oh, so it kind of fused the two things he loved in life, which is toilet humour and Dragon Ball.
That's the pitch.
Yeah. So he was loving it, but like essentially it's all manga and stuff like that. I only think that's because it's the availability of you can go into bookshops and you get all these kind of the manga books and the Dave Pilkey Dogman stuff, but the comic book like Marvel DC, it just doesn't seem to be aimed at the kids.
Yeah.
I may be completely wrong, but those comics could be out there, but I don't see them.
Well, so the funny thing is, sort of like I often think about it, that obviously in Japan, where manga is native, it's in big phone books. Shonen Jump comes out every week, and it's a huge, giant compilation of so many comics, and it's made on really crap phone book paper, but it's to be consumed and not sort of things you're supposed to hang on to and put on your shelf. And it's funny thinking about the Western comic book industry that went full glossy, full super expensive floppies in the market, whereas there is still that market out there where, like, kids, if you give them a big tome of awesome comics, the name of the podcast, they're going to go away and read it, and for parents at the moment that would be a boon, wouldn't it? Just like, oh, they would just absorb for hours, and there is a market there, but it's just it's just a bit of a weird one.
And with the sort of this side of because Bumstorm is very clearly, I mean, the main character is called Guff, which is one of the greatest words in the English language. but you know, it's tailor made. You know, I already can see how kids would absolutely love this book. But with comics, especially being on the other side of the convention table, certainly, and we've all had this, like when you've got your comics out there, and a parent comes up with their kids and they'll say, is this appropriate for them?
Yes, because we need the sales.
Yeah, we do need the sales, and we have no morals. but with the sort of with this sort of that humor, the toilet humor side of comics and stuff, how do you find like your interaction and sort of pitching and stuff like that with parents at conventions or just in general with your comics?
So straight up, the title of Bumstorm has an additional subheading underneath it, and that is the comic about farting. It started as a comic about farting, but then I decided to go full Stanley and go, no, it's the comic about farting. and I do that because it sort of sets some parents' feelings at ease, because like you could say Bumstorm and it could be like liquid shit levels of sort of horror. It's not necessarily going to be dry humor of farts. So I put it on there. So this is just farts. You're not going to find horrible scat content in here. And a lot of the time it's sort of like, the audience is varied. It's sort of like you'll get dads that come over and sort of almost trying to goad their kids to be interested in it to sort of excuse him buying it, and mums and kids going super hyper about it. I've not really had too many concerned parents going, and is this on the up and up, because it's none of the covers are like gruesome, and it's like I like graphically design them so they're sort of like in that line of, this is obviously aimed at kids, it's bright and aimed that way. Yeah, never really.
It's almost got like a the covers themselves have a kind of children's book feel to them as well. You know, with the borders and the way you've sort of laid it out as well.
Yep, they're shamelessly stolen from the way the Dragon Ball covers were made. It is all just a horrible homage. Just,
yeah, it works really well though.
I love ripping stuff off for graphic design. I don't know what it is. It's sort of like when you can recreate something, it feels like a superpower. Sort of like copying.
And
like,
a lot of graphic design is very much, there's no originality in everything. It's taking your influences and then just tweaking them to your own twisted evil ends.
I was like that when I made the Netflix template. To get it as close as possible to what they had. But you were saying, Rob, like some people write it off. They see the title and go, oh, yeah, Bumstone, that's a good title, and then kind of move on and sometimes not engage. Is that an issue?
It's the free laugh. They've already got, they go, haha, that's brilliant. It's like, no, there are more jokes inside. Please give me money. You like reeling them in with the imaginary fishing rod, and you know, have the comics open and stuff for people to jump in and read. I suppose it is a great word, and it is the where it all began. He's actually the surname of the main character as well. His full name is Guff Bumstorm.
Did you have a cousin called that or something? Is that?
If you want to go into the origins of where Bumstorm came from,
oh yeah, go on then. Yeah, yeah.
There's several levels to it. When I was courting my wife over the internet, we used to talk to each other in MSN with like the doodles, where you could like doodle on it and send them a doodle in real time. And one of the doodles I drew was like me, like a fart coming out of my bum and threatening her with like a fist or whatever. It's like, we have a strange relationship.
We've been there.
Like back when I was a kid, I remember when I was a Cub Scout and I became a Sixer and I was like wielding real power. I had a second in command and he was called Grunt. And I'm sure he had a real name, but I can't remember it. And he was called Grunt because he was a man of few words, but he was physically so strong. He could grapple anyone to the ground. And then as an act of dominance, he would fart on them and they would feel it. Like it would reverberate through them. They would be scented, I guess. And he was like, you know, that was great to have as a Sixer. It kept my other, underlings in control. But then eventually left and I had to, keep them under control in different ways. But like, so there's like all these thoughts, farts are, this is the pitch, isn't it? Farts are a universal language and we can all speak them.
It is really. I mean, music, food and farts. They're, everyone can talk about them. And you certainly cover it in Bumstorm. And I noticed that there's one thing about sort of like comics like this, and it's true of a lot of sort of like all ages books as well. They can work on two levels as well, can't they? Because let's face it, a lot of us grown ups aren't really grown up, are we? I mean,
I've noticed people are like that.
Yeah, very immature people. We don't condone immaturity on this show. We're very highbrow. It's like the culture show.
Culture of bacteria, maybe.
But there is that sort of tapping into, the kids see the humour on a certain base level, whether it be the visual jokes or the funny names or whatever. But parents can also see it on another level. And do you find that when you're writing it, you can sometimes get a joke in that is more of a grown up kind of joke, really? Under the radar, is that something you try to
definitely
get in?
I have, I've almost perfected that, I think, where I can just about skirt the line of like avoiding an angry parent or whatever. It's like if you go back and watch old episodes of Rainbow, that was just euphemism after euphemism.
Yeah,
just,
Blue Peter are famous for it as well, aren't they? Blue Peter, we used to go on about ploughing things and all this sort of thing during farming bits and stuff. Yeah, it's quite famous. Yeah.
And it's obviously a great way to do entertainment because it is, I don't want to refer to children as a lucrative market, but it's all ages can mean all ages in that way of sort of like the kid will like, I like the, the colorful action and what's going on. And then an adult might see like a sneaky joke and go, oh, there is a second level to that I can appreciate.
And there's certainly like one of the ones that stuck out to me because I had to double take when I read it He's one of the characters has like a horn and like a ring through his nose. And old Guff says, "Come get some, bull bag." Now he says, "Bull bag." Now I had to read that a couple of times because I thought, "Did you just call someone a bull bag?"
Yeah, it's sort of like making up your own sort of language to sort of fill in for where swear words would be. I think
that
someone
must be quite
someone...
tricky as well, because let's face it, it's easy to revert to a swear word or something that's super crude. There is an art to going under the radar, isn't there, with language?
There's lots of lost swear words and things that were sort of like people don't use the word prat as much anymore, do they?
Don't they? Yeah, I quite like prat. Yeah.
Or pillock.
Yeah, and cack was the word for poo for a while.
I used cack the other day, actually. I was quite proud of myself. It was in describing the Wonder Woman movie.
I've not gone near that. I read all the reviews and I was like, no, I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, you did the right thing. did you come from like, were you a Dragon Ball Z fan then? Is that how that started?
A friend loaned me VHS tapes of it when I was in sixth form, and I got like a terrible fever flu, so I was stuck at home for a fair few days, and I consumed it. I absolutely, you know, took it into my being, and I was just obsessed with Dragon Ball for the longest time. That sort of led on to all the other manga and anime and stuff that I got into. I don't think Dragon Ball is the greatest thing ever created. There's loads of incredible flaws with it and stuff like that. But I think it is, in many ways, an easy breezy thing to get into.
And it is very much a gateway drug for a lot of people as well, isn't it? If you can call it that, you know, once you're into that, then they'll discover lots of other sort of great manga and sort of different sort of crazy collections and stuff. And one thing I notice about certainly like the Eastern sort of manga and stuff is some of their humour books. I know we've talked about it on the show a few times. Like One Punch Man is one of those books that I think the humour really translates very well.
Okay.
I mean, the animated show just genuinely makes me laugh out loud.
The art in One Punch Man is, I would almost go as far to say, the best action art in the world at the moment.
Great. It's really good.
Because I mean,
they're just, yeah.
From what I've seen, there's a bit of Daniel Warren Johnson in a lot of it, isn't there? You can see where he gets his sort of motion line stuff from, and there's a bit
definitely.
Of that.
We can literally animate some of the panels because he's like done multiple ones of them and stuff like that, where people have made animated GIFs that are just like look like a whole animated sequence. I think in the most recent chapter, there was like a very Death Star like trench run scene between the main baddie and sort of like the one of the heroes. It's like a jet fighter plane, and it's so like Murata's his name, the artist, absolute mutant. I've seen him draw and it's just sort of like no sketches put down, just incredible line art straight onto the page, and you're like, just I know, it's,
oh my god,
just at that high level, just, you know, doesn't see shapes anymore, he's in the Matrix, just
thing is out there, they put him through it, don't they? It's like
slave
labor out there almost, isn't it? You got to sit at your desk for 20 hours a day or you're nobody, I think. So being able to do that is a big advantage, I think.
Yeah, because they have like all assistants and stuff, like with like, it's almost like a house where people are like waiting on the next page to go in and do all like the backgrounds and stuff. It is horrendous. It's sort of like, I don't know how they do it every week, but they manage to do it, and they sleep for like 3 or 4 hours and just get up and do it all over again. But I suppose if you're the very apex of your craft and you're like Oda with One Piece and you're just making, this is your life's work and it's everything you love, I guess you're prepared to do it.
Strange, it kind of harks back to the old masters where they had like all the people under them doing a lot of the legwork, and then they would come in, and not saying they didn't do anything, but they're kind of acolytes, as they were, do a lot of the work and remain relatively uncredited.
I suppose it's interesting with regard to sort of like they are apprenticeships in comics, aren't they? Because obviously, I would say in Japan, being a comic artist is far more a bigger sort of profession than it is, unfortunately, in the rest of the world, other than maybe France and Belgium and stuff.
Yeah.
But like the idea of having apprentices that get into comics that way by helping out on other comics is quite unique in that way. You know, that's how a lot of people get into anthologies and stuff on this side of the ocean, but it obviously helps, and they obviously learn a lot from the masters.
I think it's a great idea. You know, I think if you look at some of the people like the Krusty Bunkers and all these sort of guys that, you know, used to go and work in with Neil Adams and all these people, I think it's a great idea. You know, it's a good place to learn.
Mm. Yeah, I think apprenticeship like that was learning on the job. You just can't beat it, without a doubt. I mean, I don't mind those kind of courses that run up and down the country about learning comics, but the best thing is just to bloody get your hands in there, get stuck in.
You've got to make comics, haven't you, really? You've got to be involved in it in some kind of way. Unless you're one of the 1% who's just born talented and is just, you know, who can just make fantastic graphic novels just right out of the box.
Well, you've just got to hate talent, haven't you? Just really just look at it from the side and go, if I could eat your brain and just have that ability.
There's a dark side to Rob, I think.
Mind you, if you ate someone's brain, that might cause some farts, mightn't it?
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cabbage of the body, I refer to it as. Right.
Okay, let's test him, shall we? Because, I mean, never mind the farts. You also, you talk about processed food and you talk about powers. How much do you know about the science of what gives you good farts?
Right, you want to get into this? You want to really go into this?
Oh!
I'm ready.
If you know, then we are ready to learn.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what.
Lay it down.
I'm not going to go straight into the science. I'm going to sidestep it a little bit. Obviously, doing Bumstorm, people come up to you, start talking to you about farts, and you know, normally it's a sort of level of like, oh yeah, you know, my brother's the big farter in our family. But sometimes they give you like, oh, did you know that farting was like a medieval sort of like job? And it makes sense because you had like jesters and stuff like that that would obviously rely on toilet humor and farts to appease the king. But like I think it was in the 20th century, there was this guy called Le Petit, which translates as fart maniac, and he was, you know, when I talk about mutants, this guy could breathe in from his anus, and it meant he could fart on command.
That's a shit X-Man, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a mutant. He has a superhuman ability, and he learned this apparently because he went swimming in the ocean and he felt like a wet feeling. And when he got out, it was sort of like his bum hole had sucked up like 2 gallons of water, and it was like, what the hell is this all about? And then, of course, you know, as any wise man does, he's like, how can this make me money? And he was performing at the Moulin Rouge, and he was one of the highest sort of like intakes of money for them. Because he could just fart on command and do all this crazy stuff.
Why wasn't that in the musical?
I know. You know, Christina Aguilera just lets one rip.
I bet she's got a big fart on her.
Can't keep that genie in a bottle.
Christina, if you're listening, we love you.
I bet they smell nice, though.
Don't try and save it now, Tony. It's too late. The damage has already been done. Much like a big fart. So did you learn all this like at a convention table? Did someone just, or did you then think, I need to research something like this? Because you've painted yourself into a corner, my friend, haven't you? It's like some people like, well, I created this popular horror comic and now I'm the monsters guy. I created a martial arts book and now I'm the creator that knows all about kung fu. Whereas you have put yourself in quite a genre, haven't you?
Yeah, it was Bumstorm was created to just get me back into comics, because this is my second go around. I started comics when I was like 17 in sixth form, and I did a web comic called Waffle X, and it was in like the year 2000, and it was like at the front of all that stuff, and it did all right.
Is it still available, or have you hidden it away?
I have hidden it away. I'm just blessed enough that it was in that age where stuff wasn't archived on the internet 100%. And it started out like half autobiography comic and half fantasy. And it was just an absolute mess. But some stuff happened and I had to leave comics and sort of go and life it up for a bit.
Yeah.
So I think I went through like a really corporate job at one point, and it was like doing loads of copyright and stuff. And I didn't do anything creative for like 3 years flat. And I was like, I need a reason to get back into, you know, to making comics and doing something creatively worthwhile. And like, I needed something low stakes. I was like, what's, you know, I've got a horrible thing called projects.txt that has like 30 to 40 ideas in it that will never see the light of day. And Bombstorm was sort of just sitting there at the top. And I was like, look, this is, let's see what we can punt out in like a fortnight. And because we were going to table at Thought Bubble, which was like a good deadline to sort of like, I'm going to have something at Thought Bubble. So that pushed me into doing it. And then of course I'm an over developer in that any idea I sort of do, I've got like 50 issues of it locked and loaded in my head. And Bombstorm is just, the stupider the idea, the more its talons get into you and go like, what about this? Or what about this fart move? And what about farts versus burps? And what about, what is this? What is the world government system like in this world of horrible fart competitions and stuff like that? And yeah, it just goes on and on and on. So I'm all right with being the fart guy. I don't care.
Oh, well, that's good then. You know,
so, see the shit I get, mate.
We did mention this briefly last week about as a creator, when you stop creating, it's kind of really, I found it tough. You just, it just doesn't seem right that this is happening. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it can be really difficult to to kickstart the project again. It's something that I certainly have struggled with, like, and to the point where a lot of ideas, like, you overthink them too much. You're like, oh well, that's not gonna be the opus that I want it to be. And then you'll probably find something that you can say oh, I could probably do this in 2 weeks, and you just do it just for the fun of it. And those ideas can end up being the ones that, who knows, you're 3 issues, 4 issues down the road with a book that, you know, you've got the 50 issue arc in your head. But did you think, you know, this would be the series? Do you know what I mean? Did you, you know, was it, let's try issue one, see how that goes down? At Thought Bubble, no less.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the other side to my stuff is, and this is why I wanted to sort of say that I'd been in comics before, yeah, is we sort of fell into a job writing some regular show graphic novels.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about this. Yeah.
Cartoon Network. So my wife, in another life, was the head writer on Ed, Edd n Eddy for Cartoon Network. I think she wrote an Adventure Time comic that never came out. And then she did some regular show backup stories. And then she got, they asked her, you know, would you like to do a graphic novel? Because I think someone dropped out of it. Mm. And she was like, yeah, okay. And she'd never done anything like, you know, she'd done like long scripts for TV, but like, if you've ever watched Ed, it's a very sort of like wordy, the voice artists just take it away and speak for like 5 minutes show. So she asked me for some like help on how to get dialogue whittled down, and what are the sort of rules for how many words can be in a word balloon and stuff like that. And before we knew it, we were essentially co-writing this graphic novel. So the first one of them was called Hydration, and I'm not officially credited on it other than in special thanks. And that's the one that was coming out of that Thought Bubble. And I was like, it, like, you saw other people's like Thought Bubble stands, and there's like all this other stuff they've been doing. And it was like, we didn't really want to just show up with just like one graphic novel and go, hey, buy this or go away, I guess. And I was like, look, this is a good impetus. I've obviously been dragged back into comics kicking and screaming. I'm going to do it. This is a time to make something. And it's also, you know, you've had him on the show before. A big sort of like activator for me coming into the small press scene was seeing obviously what's out there. And one of the comics was James Lawrence's Dangerine that I saw in A Traveling Man. Mm. And when I just left university, I remember asking around how much it would cost to get a small comic printed. I think it's like around about 2005, 2006. And it was like, it was grand. It was like thousands of pounds.
Whoa, yeah.
Just like small runs, because there wasn't this cottage industry of specialist printers yet. Yeah. So I didn't realize what had then happened until like many years later. And I saw James Lawrence's comic up on the stands. I was like, wow, this is top quality stuff. And I was like, this is no longer photocopies stapled together. This is what you're capable of getting out there yourselves. And I was like, well, there's no excuse now, is there? It's sort of, if you can do this for a couple of £100, which, you know, it's still a lot of money, but it's just sort of like, if you've got a dream of make a comic and like that's the price tag on it, you can make it happen, you know, as long as you can
do it. Yeah.
Yeah. It has been a game changer, the accessibility of, especially of full color printing as well. And to have these sort of products that that have the same sort of quality finish as, you know, and usually better than a lot of the stuff you find on your, you know, your weekly comic book rack or things like that. And it's certainly like you're spoilt for choice with the amount of like nicely printed books that you'll see. Certainly at a Thought Bubble. I mean, the printers have a hell of a time delivering for that. Which Thought Bubble was this? Was this 2015?
Yeah, I think it was 2015. I think I think that was the first one I tabled. But we'd been to the one the previous year and seen all the awesome stuff. But yeah, that was a big change. And to be honest, Thought Bubble became this sort of like yearly deadline of when I have something new for Thought Bubble. It's a good sort of like pusher. And obviously last year, unfortunately, that disappeared. So I sort of didn't do much comics work last year, but hoping to get back into it this year.
Yeah. And well, I mean, obviously with conventions being the way they are at the moment, and God bless anyone who's trying to put one on at some point this year, Thought Bubble included, obviously they've announced some new details recently. So stay tuned to their sort of Twitter.
Yeah, they have.
Fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I feel like November's just far away enough that enough people will be vaccinated.
We did say that. We said that about February a few months ago.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Well, worst comes to worst, you can just say, send your grandparents in to buy some comics. If they're all vaccinated.
I was like,
that's a big where are we going with this? This is, yeah.
Can he buy me bump storm? What?
Yeah.
Shuffle around and wheelchairs ready for them. You know, it's like
a race. The Hall Chronicles.
Pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hall Chronicles.
Yeah, so we're hoping that Thought Bubble will be back. But hey, you know, we still talk to you at last year's Thought Bubble, this wonderful social experiment that we call life. What the hell is wrong with me? The coffee's worn off. But what is, like, I must say, with your comic, the title itself is an attention grabber. And rightfully so. It's almost like you've planned it that way. Clever. But what is in the future for the story? I mean, like you say, you've got 50... How you've got 50 issues of farts and different fart moves, I do not know. Your notebooks must be massive.
It's just horrible notes just left across in different text files on my computer. Well, it is, you know, it's a shameless Dragon Ball ripoff. So in that, the format is very similar in that Guff Bumstorm is training for a world tournament called the Heavenly Winds from Below. And it's like a fart battle tournament between the greatest fartial artists in the world. And he's got his sights set on competing in that. He's sort of like trying to level up his farts and fight, you know, high-powered enemies to level up, and he crosses, you know, in the comics he crosses paths with someone else that's also on the road, a woman called Chu Chompington, and she's in the offing to try and enter the world hot dog eating competition, but her one weakness is that she can't eat when she smells something horrible. It puts her appetite off, so they sort of join forces, and you know, they can help each other out. Guff needs somewhere to sleep, and she's got a motor home, so they sort of travel around. So in the future of Bumstorm, there's, you know, it's, I sort of created it with this motor home in mind, as sort of like they can go all over the world and have adventures and stuff like that, and eventually they'll end up in like a city, and there'll be some old flatulist masters to learn special moves from and stuff like that before they enter their respective tournaments.
It's an entire world.
Yeah. Oh yeah! Oh my God! Yeah, there's so much stuff built in. I'm not kidding about the whole 50 issue thing.
Yeah.
There's like stuff down the line, like time skips and a grown up version of Guff. And
can I offer an idea up?
Sure.
Oh God!
Do you remember when you had Hollyoaks? They did like a saucy late night one. Was it Hollyoaks After Dark?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Baywatch did one, didn't they? They did Baywatch Nights or something.
Yeah.
You could do one of those. That'd be good.
Just really go all in on it. The other things that keeps Bumstorm sort of like on the up and up is that in the tournament, they're sort of like equipped with these sort of like sensors on their arms and legs, and it's to make sure that no one shits themselves. Because if you shit yourself, you'd bring disgrace to the sport. So it's got to be very sort of like dry. These are clean farts, you know.
I tell you what, these are things that need to be marketed into the real world. I know every single one of us on this show could do with those. Yeah,
that's the nature of a fart, isn't it? You know that there's something in the air.
There's an element of danger, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
Well, you are. As Tony mentioned, you are smelling shit particles.
Oh God! When you're breaking down the science of it, it is the worst.
That's what you come here for, science.
Yeah, it is science, and I'm terrified to know what Rob actually knows, because. There's the silly or jokey premise aside, but you have to create the world, and like there are laws to the world, isn't there? Especially if you've got a big story, no matter how jokey or silly it is, it has to all work. It has to all connect. I don't think when people see some sort of especially humor comics, they don't always take into account how much planning and design of the story and the world itself goes. I think because we've all come up with a quick joke, haven't we? We've all come up with like this, one paragraph. Oh, that'd be funny, but never really taken it any further. And I think some sort of humour books, from the outside, it looks like it's a one note joke, and it's only by reading it that you see that there's an expansive world about farting and this. The science of it. I cannot believe the things I'm saying this week.
I'll go further. I'll torture you more. So in the next issue of Bumstorm, Guff really meets his match, and I've met my match of drawing it. He goes up against a centaur, or centaur, not sure how you're supposed to pronounce that, but basically a horseman. And I wanted to do a horseman for one simple reason. It means he can have two butts. He can have a front butt and he can have a back butt.
What, isn't that just a lady?
What? What are you? What?
Nothing. Nothing.
What? No.
Sets of legs.
This is. What?
I don't. You start getting into the science of it, V.
Yeah. That's what we're doing, V.
I'm broken.
Please continue, Rob.
How can a centaur have two arses?
Well, two legs. So you think where the two legs meet, that means you can fit a bum in there, or at least a bum hole,
Is knee half horse?
Well, that's a way to live your life, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I love what the way we're examining it is if it's real.
You've got a scientific approach.
Yeah.
It makes it a living, breathing world of Bumstorm.
I didn't know there was a Christopher Nolan style of approach to Bumstorm, the realism is really.
You don't get any method involved. Actors involved.
So, are we talking this like double-barreled farts?
Yeah.
From a horseman.
He's really got to bring his A game and need to combat that.
Am I dreaming this entire episode?
No.
It's perfectly normal.
It's all real.
Okay.
Linda's a fiver.
This is why you need to discover this book, people, because, even if it's just for a centaur fart, but that's blown my mind. I don't know what to say. I mean, dare I ask about more, how much research did you have to, I'm scared of this, how much research did you have to do about Breaking Wind?
Well, obviously I've told you the story about the French guy. We've all farted, and I think we all surprise ourselves sometimes with like a fart. And I think
my dog does. My dog farts and barks at it.
There's one fart I did once where basically I think I was just waking up, and you know how sometimes you like spring out of bed by sort of contorting your body in a certain way to just, you don't want to use your arms, you just want to sort of fling yourself out of bed. So I sort of contorted my body in such a way that I was thinking I was like coiling myself like a spring, but at the same time I generated a fart, and it was like an air cannon. There was like a t-shirt hanging up on the wardrobe on the other end of the room, and it rustled, and it was like, yes, there's something to this idea. Now that I've seen it take place in real life, cannon powered farts. That's
my god. Dan and Tony, come on, you must have some. You've got some stories.
I remember in the glory days of my life when I was 18, 19, and me and a load of mates around somebody's house, and it got to the point where two of the girls sort of had a joke wrestle over something, and one of them farted. And that was quite a surprise to me as an 18-year-old seeing a lady do a fart. I wasn't used to that, you know.
I don't believe it. They don't. My dad spoke to one of mine.
Bloody hell. How'd that happen?
Well, I can't believe I might actually edit this out, but I have to tell the story. I was a younger lad. This wasn't last week. And I was downstairs, and I just walked past the stairs leading upstairs, and I just did an absolute corker. You know, all sound, no fear. Do you know what I mean? It was just...
Yeah.
It was an echo chamber. Beautiful. Quite proud of it. And then just heard my dad go, "What did you say?" upstairs.
Did you repeat yourself?
And that was how I learned my lesson.
I remember we used to have when smartphones started, when we all got our first iPhones, me and a mate called Sean at work, they have quite big toilets at work. And, you know, like rows of toilets and the hand basins and stuff like that. So I'd go in one of the cubicles and he would be outside pretending to wash his hands for ages until someone came in. And as soon as someone came in, these phones had like monster noises on them. Mm. Yeah. And I would set the monster noise up and then start screaming from the toilet cubicle.
I've done similar. I've went into like the toilets at work and saw my mate at the urinal and he didn't see me and I slipped in the cubicle and I was in there going, "Oh, Jesus!" like that. And like I came out and he sort of like glanced at me and it burst out laughing. The other kind of like sheepish glance to see who that was in there.
I used to work with a bloke and he was really short. He's one of his geezers. He was a bit, it affected him a bit. He was really short and he used to be a bodybuilder. So we went into this Costa Coffee and we'd been working all day, like physical
protein
work.
Protein diet, is this where this is going?
Yeah. And we went in this, it was in Braintree of all places. There you go. Went in this Costa Coffee and he's gone in there. He was American. He went in the disabled toilet to have a shit. And And you know, the disabled toilets, they sometimes open outwards, don't they? They're not like normal doors. So I couldn't, as he went in, I thought, he hasn't locked that. So I gave it a couple of minutes and then I opened the door, fully opened it. And he was sat there with his feet. I remember his feet hadn't touched the floor and his little shiny knees while he was having a poop. I'll never forget. I always thought, do Americans do this? Because he'd taken his trousers off as well to do it.
Well, they've got all the water all the way up, haven't they?
Yeah.
So... they might, like, if they don't take their trousers down, it's sort of like, I suppose, it might get wet.
Yeah. And he was just sat there. There's nothing you could do. And all these old OAPs were looking at him taking a shit in this toilet because it looked out into the restaurant. Brilliant moment.
I've been on a train where, like, they haven't locked the door and the door's slid open.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a woman sitting there on the toilet, like, revealed like a prize on the Generation game. bullseye.
There you go. There's like, your OnlyFans content.
I mean... See, this is why I asked them, Rob. I knew they were a bit nervous about starting, but once it started, all the stories come out then.
Yeah. One thing we touched upon, Rob, last time was your manufacturer of figures.
Right,
are you still doing that?
That is new, yeah. So last year, basically, because I said, you know, Thought Bubble wasn't going to happen, and I was like, I sort of lost my comics mojo, because I think my physical comic selling game is strong because that's where families come around with their kids and stuff and they can see the comic, whereas my digital game is kids aren't really, you know, on Gumroad and stuff like that. They're not like going, "Oh, where's this indie press at?"
Yeah. Well, where's my DRM free PDF?
Yeah. So I sort of like I needed a hobby. I think we all needed some new hobbies and stuff last year, and I fell down a well of researching how to make action figures with like 3D printing and stuff. And I'm still learning. I'm still doing prototypes and stuff like that. But I am getting there. Sort of making some cool looking figures and stuff like that. So I've sort of got the prototyping phase down. The next phase is making proper molds and pouring the resin into them and stuff like that, so you can mass manufacture them. But there will be a Guff Bumstorm action figure at some point. And obviously that will set the kids, you know, eyes alight. I won't have scratch and sniff like stuff though. that's going too far, and that's like a level of chemical involvement I don't want to be on my grave.
Yeah. So one day you just need to get really drunk at your table and go, "Watch me light this fart, kids," you know, just do a lot of that.
It really will be a bum store.
The free fart, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
My business just skyrockets downwards.
Yeah.
Although, like, you could, I mean, surely there must be a place where you can print on whoopee cushions. Do you remember when whoopee cushions were the big thing? When I was a kid.
Yeah, and then they get those electric boxes that would make all different fart noises, didn't they, with the remote control.
Yeah.
I used one of them for many years. They were brilliant.
Yeah. Or you could have, like, one of those sort of the noise boxes, like the Mr. T in my pocket, but a bum storm in your pocket and it's different farts. God,
yeah,
all this marketing. Cool. I'd
Method act, though. I'd want to record them. I wouldn't want to just use sound programs. I'd be like, how do I make these sounds myself?
Yeah,
so I can say authentic fart noises.
Yeah, and then you can also edit out the moments where you go, oh god.
Yeah. Oh no. Get the hose.
That's gonna stink.
Oh god.
Oh, I told you the story about the sock, didn't I? I told you this story, didn't I?
Oh, no. There's
no.
Many...
I was in a lot. I was locked in a pub. You like this, Rob? Locked in a pub in the East End, and it was like all kicking off, and one was drunk like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I went to the toilet, and I really needed to do a number two, and there was no toilet door, you know. So I was sitting there doing one, and there was. I looked down, and there was a sock, and some clever builder had taken his sock off because there was no toilet paper and used it. Yeah, which is actually quite cunning. And then,
alternatives.
Yeah, so I went outside and I told the barman, I said, oh, someone's done that, you know. And he went in and he did that thing that you do when you pick dog shit up, you know, you carry a bag, you turn it inside out, and then you tie it at the top.
Yeah.
But the way he tied it was full of air. So he came back in the bar and we're throwing this sock at each other as hard as we could.
What?
To try and get it to burst on each other. And at that point, I thought, probably time to go home, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the time.
Yeah, you should really look at yourself and your choices at that moment. When you're, when you're throwing a basically like an inflatable bag with a shitty sock in it.
Yeah.
Title of the episode sorted, though.
when I gave up drinking.
I like the idea that barman knew what he needed to do, as if this has happened multiple times.
It happened before.
Yeah.
He's very, very naturalistic.
That fucking when sock guy again, is it?
Yeah. When you if you're sitting there on the toilet and you know you need to wipe, don't you? And you there's no toilet paper. You end up doing like trying to shuffle to another toilet or something. Just take a sock off. There's a bit of advice for you.
Yeah,
you just start losing parts of yourself as you go.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what has this show become? I knew this would happen.
What a shit show!
What?
There you go, Cannon. Another mention for Johnny Cannon. Welcome to the shit show.
Well, welcome to the shit show. Great book. But going back to the comics, though, after those enlightening stories, so you find out more about everyone, the guests and the hosts on this show. Please don't use any of that information against us. But what were your... Obviously, you dropped out of comic... In terms of, like, creating comics and stuff, what were your comics influences? What were you reading like when growing up, or what started you in the comics? Was it just exclusively the sort of manga and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a weird Brit in that I don't really like Doctor Who, I don't like Harry Potter, and I didn't really read much of the Beano. I'm sort of like a national traitor, I guess. So I grew up reading the Mickey Mouse comics, which were serialized. I remember them, and I remember reading the Turtles comics and the Ghostbusters comics, and then the big one was Sonic the comic, which was obviously done by the 2000 AD lot as like their foray into kids stuff.
It's mentioned so many times, that comic.
Yeah,
it comes up so often.
It really is.
That is the gateway drug. I think Mark Miller did Streets of Rage.
I think you're right, man. Yeah
Really?
Bloody hell.
Yeah. So that was my big... I think it was Fortnightly. That was the one I looked forward to.
There was an artist for Sonic the Comic that is mentioned so many times. I want to say it's Richard something. There's people listening to this show screaming at their iPads or whatever at the moment. But
Richard Elson.
That was it. Yeah, that's him. He was quite a massive figure for a lot of indie creators, you know.
Definitely. They were like you know, obviously with any comic, there were sort of like filler issues and stuff like that. But when they sort of adapted the Sonic games the most, he was on it. He was there with, you know, this incredible looking clean artwork. And that was always something to look forward to. So that was me growing up, reading the Sonic comic. And then years later, I think when I was like a teenager and stuff like that, I got into X-Men. I think it was during the Cosmic X-Men they were reprinting over here. So that was a hell of a ride. But my first US bought comic... from that side of things was a really tricky one. It was Spider Boy when they did the amalgam thing.
Oh yeah.
And I picked that up at the local newsagent and I really liked it, even though it was probably supposed to be trash. And they were like joking it and going, say, like, oh, in, you know, Adventures of Spider Boy 271. Now, there was no internet back then. I didn't know this was a joke. So I was like trying to go to my newsagent and say, I'll have Spider Boy issue 2, please. And they were like, yeah, we'll put you down for it. And obviously it never came. And I was getting really ticked off with it. And it was like, then years later, oh, that was just us being funny. And I was like, God damn it. But that was obviously the gateway to all the American stuff with X-Men and properly collecting Spider-Man and stuff. But I am very, very influenced by manga. My favorite comic is One Piece, which has just celebrated its 1,000th chapter.
I mean, that's just
bloody hell.
That's been talked about a few times on this show. But, you know...
So what's your reading habits around that? Do you read it online or do you buy physical copies or how does it work?
So I used to have a Shonen Jump subscription, which was, I can't remember how much it used to be, but nowadays it's like $2, I think, to go back and read all the back issues, which is a hell of a deal. Yeah. They gave in to the way the world was, and it's released free every week, the new chapters. There's like a stock of the last three latest chapters that you can read each week if you're keeping current. So there's like, I think it releases Sundays today, and it comes out, and that's my, you know, church of manga or whatever, where I catch up on My Hero Academia and One Piece and occasionally Dragon Ball Super, which is still going.
So presumably they make money off advertising and people who want to then go back and download the app, I suppose. Is that the idea? Or
I think the funny thing is with a lot of these properties, and I have worked in marketing before, so I can sort of tip my hand there, is that it's just keeping you current. It's keeping you as a current customer and loving the brand and knowing that just through doing that, you're going to buy figurines, you're going to buy the video games, you're going to make bigger purchases and stuff like that. Because I don't really see big old adverts. It's not like YouTube and there's a, you know... Yeah.
It's the first I'm hearing of you telling me. I mean, that
it's,
you do this.
It's probably one of those things that in Japan, it makes its money. It's so enormous. We probably can't fathom how enormous this is and how many issues are being bought, physical issues are being bought on a weekly basis.
What was it? It was the big one in Japan at the moment is, I think it's Demon Slayer. Mm. And you know, even without taking like the US market into consideration, I think it's like... I don't want to put numbers out there, but it just decimated the industry. It was like something like 80 million. And I can't remember what that number relates to, if it was like volume sold or if it was some kind of cash thing, but it was just unprecedented snowball levels of just taking over the world. So they really don't have to sweat the details on sort of how much it makes over here. But, you know, as you know, Dan was saying with, you know, his kids reading manga, they just swing straight for it in the comic shops these days. They just go straight to it because they know it's a huge source of quality and they are collecting the volumes and they are buying up in huge. I think like the US graphic market had like 5 My Hero Academia volumes in it for last year. So it's sort of...
It's an enormous market. I mean, much like we say, like the European market, you know, a lot of Western audiences just cannot fathom how big it is and how seriously it's taken. And I know Shonen Jump is something that I know Sam Webster's, every time we've had like a manga chat on the Facebook group or anything, you know, he's always front and center because he reads that religiously all the time and he's always recommending it.
Do you think they put that stuff online because they know they can't control... if they said, right, we're only going to put out in books, someone would scan that and it'd be online.
Well, see, this is the fascinating thing about it and the internet and the things that people will do for free. The amount of scanlated and free translated manga that comes out that doesn't necessarily see, you know, volume releases and stuff like that, all the, you know, the tremendously weird stuff that they obviously put out in Japan. That there's just people working away, essentially doing a second job in their spare time, just translating perfectly these mangas and stuff like that. And yeah, I think the industry just had to go like, there's no way to stop this, much like sort of like music piracy.
Yeah.
They're just like, well, why don't we just put our own label on it? And just that way, you know, someone else isn't sort of not twisting our words, but couldn't get us into trouble by...
Yeah, you want control over it.
The control over the narrative, isn't it?
Even if it's coming to your site to read it, it's better than...
Yeah, and the sensibilities... the sensibilities in Japan are slightly different, aren't they, in relation to sex? And it's they've got different views on it, haven't they? As well, yeah. I think perhaps there's a control over that if you're doing that as well, you know. Is it there's a pubic hair thing, isn't it? You're not allowed to show pubic hair. Is that the right? I think that's right.
I think they've relaxed it a little bit,
right?
But, yeah, there's so many weird different laws, I guess, when you hop over and you don't know their culture.
Yeah.
But sort of going back to like Shonen Jump, that they did try to do it in the US for a while. They did do the big phone book releases and I've got quite a few of those, and that's how I started reading One Piece, because I wasn't aware of it before then, before they started serializing it. Now I was just buying it for the Dragon Ball stuff, and it's so difficult because I think it's a great format. And when I first started publishing Bombstorm, I went to, because I as I said, I saw James Lawrence's Danger, and I was like, who was this printed with? And it was with Comic Printing UK, with Rich.
Yeah.
And I went to him and I said, like, what's your shittest paper? What is your sort of cheapest, worst paper? Just, and he said, you know, that's not how it works, because obviously, why would I have that? You can only get that sort of paper if you're a huge, huge printer doing newspapers and stuff like that.
Yeah, but newsprint. Yeah, that's the big thing for us.
Can't really get hold of it now, can you? It's really hard to get hold of it.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of us would like to use it, I think, Rob. Same. That's the thing. We think it's really, and especially stuff like the old Vertigo trades, there was something close to it in there as well. But yeah, everything's got to be a bit more upmarket now.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think there's definitely a market for huge tomes of comics. Because I think about like the big puzzle things they punt out every year, like loads of crosswords and stuff.
Yeah,
in them,
God, yeah.
Stuff like that.
You look at the trades of Cerebus or From Hell or those sort of big, thick trades. That's the paper they use. It works fine for me. You know, that sort of light phone directory thing going on.
That's what those big omnibuses used to be.
The essentials.
And that was all very stripped back, black and white, just, you know, but like I say,
they were great, man.
You have to print them in such high volume, which unfortunately just cuts out a lot of small press and indie creators, because otherwise you'd probably be able to live in a fort made of the boxes of your comics.
I don't know that. I'd live in Bumstorm.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it'd be a dangerous place, wouldn't it?
I think I could fend for myself.
Oh, really?
I think I've got some.
Do you have
moves.
A high protein diet?
I do eat a lot of meat. Yeah.
Meat and cheese.
I do. Well, not. I don't like cheese. That's another thing I'm a weirdo on. Sometimes when like in a, they go like, "Oh, you don't like cheese," and everyone looks at me like, "What the hell is wrong with you?" But like, I'm not lactose intolerant. I, you know, drink milk and stuff
not
like that.
Fan.
Just not a fan of the old cheesy.
Fair enough.
Well, Tony's got you covered, because you love a bit of cheese, don't you, Tony?
I do love cheese, man. Yeah, I'm a big fan of cheese. Yeah.
We cover all the really important topics on this show, don't we?
Farting cheese.
Shit. Sunday afternoon, I always have cheese and biscuits. I like that. It's all right.
No word of a lie, I had crackers and cheese today.
Nice. Nice fact, didn't you?
It was amazing. It was lovely. Bit of Branston pickle. Get in
Look at you.
Get in my face. What do you mean, look at me? It's not posh, Tony. To have Branston pickle. Well, it is if you have the smooth one. You know, it's pretty posh.
Is there a smooth one?
Yeah.
Sandwich pickle,
yeah. Yeah, I think you can get like a completely smooth one that's like a condiment.
I'm not having any of that.
It's got to be small chunk. Small chunk if you're making sandwiches.
Sandwich spread looks like vomit.
Oh, depends. Yeah, some of them are rough. What were we talking about? Comics. We've really covered the gambit. I mean, it started with kids' comics and toilet humour, and now look at us.
Do you think you'll ever do an audio book?
Please.
Ooh. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
I've got a mic. You know, it's there. It's, you know, I remember those
cabbage.
Like, do you remember those early learning books where you like press play on them sometimes? Parents will love that, won't they?
You've got those novelty books where it's a turn book and then you've got the buttons down the right hand side that do different sounds when you see it with the story. That'd work.
I mean, we joke, but there is genuinely lots of things you could do with this book, and that's part of the joy of it.
Scratch and sniff.
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, no. No.
I have asked, and obviously it's not on the table yet. My big thing is holograms. I don't know what it is. Like, I guess it's because I'm a 90s kid, but I just remember those holograms on the front covers of some of the comics.
Yeah, God. Holograms used to be just the best. You find them.
They're always a bit shit as well, aren't they?
Sticker albums, they're very good. Action figures.
Well, there's. I've looked into it, and there's like there's different levels of holograms, and there's like the proper like full 3D ones are the ones that I love, not the sort of like just slightly sparkly ones.
You're talking about the ones that you got in the Visionaries and things like that, where it looks like there's
like a 3D model.
Yeah, Spider-Man used them, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a War Machine one in like a card pack of Marvel stuff, and it's like one of my most precious objects. It's just like I remember like just getting that when I was like 13. I was like, that's it, I'm out. I will never collect another card pack again. It's never going to match this.
But
that, plus your Atomic Herc one, that'd be brilliant.
Oh, God, yeah. It was really noodles. Yeah. Yeah, but that costs an awful lot of money, though, doesn't it?
What did well, you? Never say never.
Yeah. Ooh. You heard it here first, folks.
I mean, I'd love to. I've not got the money, but like, there's a way that I could do it.
Now. He says it now, but, you know.
There's got to be a way of getting an action man where you press his tummy and like, he makes a farting noise. There's got to be a way, isn't there?
Yeah, God, yeah.
Yeah.
There surely must be. But, yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to more issues of Bumpstorm. It's definitely... what is it about, like, this sort of humour that is... It's always been popular with kids and, like... I mean, being an 80s kid, certainly a lot of the stuff... You know, you read anything like Oink or whatever. There was always some sort of toilet humour going on.
The zits, wasn't it?
The two zits. Farts, burps.
Yeah.
There were lots of like smell lines coming off things. Do you remember when smell lines were a thing?
Yeah.
And the flies buzzing about.
Well, it still fucking goes in viz.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I suppose they're keeping
Johnny Fart Pants.
Yeah. Johnny Fart Pants.
Sorry, it just makes me laugh. The fact that you're just genuinely saying the name. Johnny Fartpants.
There's a Japanese one that someone made me aware of that's just like a detective, and his just face is just a butt. It's just a featureless butt. I don't know if it's like, it might be like played completely straight that he's going around solving mysteries and nobody ever raises it, but
You've got arse face, haven't you, in Preacher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but his face wasn't an actual pair of bum cheeks. It was just an unfortunate scarring. Oh my god! Oh, but
I do have an enemy in the future of Bumpstorm that has a bum on his head.
Good.
Oh god! What, you don't get better than that, do you?
I'm just going to spoil it because you know the kids aren't listening. So like, it's a race of creatures that live underground called the Sulfurians. And they've got bums on their heads, and they're a truly formidable adversary.
Do they all sting like egg?
Yeah, just like horrible, really stinky smells.
And they're you had a really bad tummy.
Yeah. Are they silent? Because there's nothing more deadly than the silent
ones. You could have ninja farts, couldn't you? So they were silent but deadly.
Oh, well, in the first...
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, but there's the first issue of... is it within the first couple of pages of Bumpstorm, there's a ninja firing... here it is. His wind shurikens.
Yep.
Is he literally firing bum stars out of him?
So they can mold their farts into physical objects. That's like high level fart ability stuff where their farts are so heavy they sort of form almost like physical objects. So people are, because like Guff's like main move is he like just a giant fucking fist comes out and batters his opponents, like this giant fart fist comes out, or like a fart foot, and you know he's at that level. But like in
like
the future,
Green Lantern, isn't it? It's a bit yeah, physical, yeah, like that. Yeah. I think we can visualize it. Yeah, we've all done a fart which we can literally see in the air, hanging there, can't we? You know,
or one that like slaps someone across the face. We've seen the actual physical effect that is on our enemies.
There's always one bloke at work who would always like reverse up to you at speed, and you're like, "Oh fucking hell!"
Yeah.
But like, sorry, we're just going into the technicality of Bumpstorm. Like, so they have this tournament, and there's like two different ways to win, I guess, where you either outstink your opponent, and they'll sort of like, you know, fall prey to the gas, or it's just like the literal concussive force of the fart, where if you could like grapple someone with your legs and then fart on them, and it would like knock their not the consciousness out of them. Put too much thought into this.
For a book where there's literally a double page spread of someone shouting the word bum punch. Seriously, folks, though, you know, I don't think I've said the word fart so many times in all my life, even when I was a kid. And that's why you need to check out this book and more Rob's work. Where can people like go to find out more about this?
I haven't as of yet made a web page for it by itself because I'm worried. But
what is that concern? Because I think we spoke about that just before we started recording.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. That was off the record. I'm always worried if I just tell people like, oh, just go and Google Bumstorm, what's going to come back into their eyes. And they're going to hold me accountable for it. I'm all the social medias is Rob Luckett. That's Luckett with two T's at the end. And my website's luckettopia.com, and I normally have all links to the stores and stuff that I've got Gumroad and a Big Cartel and stuff.
Have you put it on Comixology or anything yet?
Not yet. I did briefly consider Comic House because they were saying they were going to be starting looking for kid stuff.
It's a big thing now.
I was thinking that once I get to issue 5, that's a good solid.
Do both, man. Mm-hmm. Stick them up, both up. Yeah, it's two revenue streams, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
So, yes. So, Luckettopia. Luckettopia.
Yes, it's like a little fictional floating island I created just out of university, because like back then everything was Flash animated, and I used to be a Flash animator for a bit, and it was like a very Flash heavy website with like this floating island, and it's just like I like to.
I remember the glory days of Flash and Newgrounds. Do you remember the games on Newgrounds?
Yeah, Newgrounds.
I was Waffle X. Lived on after the webcomic as a pilot cartoon that was on Newgrounds.
Wow, that's just blown my mind.
Here's my lame fame. I used to do a bit of animating for Hallmark Cards. You remember eCards?
Oh, yeah.
To send people like hello animations. I did like some of them for Hallmark years and years ago.
There you go. I have no claim.
It's a fact. Well, that's a lame to fame.
Crushed.
There was one card I had to work on. It was like in a factory and something was happening. It was like a Valentine's card or something. And the guy kept on asking for so many changes because it's vector Flash. Mm. I put fuck off loads of times really small in the background just to. You couldn't see it, but I knew it was there.
Yeah, I think I remember reading down that you did animation and you decided that it wasn't for you, and I was the exact same.
Yeah.
It was just sort of like, this is torturous.
This is bollocks.
Was it have a career where you draw things over and over again, the same thing? It doesn't sound fun to
me. Yeah, no. Yeah. I was like, do one really well, and then I can't even do that really well, but just do one really well and don't worry about the animation. I love animation. I've got the massive amounts of time and respect for it, but I've got no time or patience to create it.
Well, that's what you guys.
It's crushing. You just sort of like, it's the thing is the Parks and Rec episode with one of the main characters that makes like a stop motion thing. And he's like, he has like 1 second's worth of footage. And he was like, you think a depressed person could create this?
Yeah, I compared it to Avatar. I love that episode. So basically what you're saying is, you guys, you're not going to do animation, but now you're going to create franchises that will eventually be Netflix exclusive animated shows. That's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Oh, that would be the dream. There's quite a few getting made now, isn't there? There's Dead Endia of Hamish Stills. Obviously, there's Hilda and stuff like that. Obviously, Netflix is hungry for content, and you know,
Is it Below Decks, whatever that Star Trek one is? Is
Lower
that the one?
Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Is that Netflix? Or is that some other?
Amazon, I think, isn't it? Is it Disney?
No, I think it's Amazon because I watched the first episode this week. I think it came out in the US a while ago. And it is something looking on social media, there's a lot of good vibes about it. And I will say, I watched the first episode and it was funny. It was hilarious. At the same time, I don't know how I feel about it. But that's just the grumpy old nerd in me. It's very good. But I don't know.
But Star Trek's actually got quite a lot of humour in it anyway.
Yeah, but this is more like the sort of humour that you get in your standard sort of.
It seems like Rick and Morty style humour.
Yeah,
is that kind of humour?
Yeah,
it looks like Rick and Morty animation as well.
Yeah, it does.
It's very much that kind of stuff. Not, I mean, it's more sort of all ages than something like Rick and Morty. But it's worth a shot. But yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. I've heard the ending's really good as well. But yeah. But
yeah, I mean, Hilda's very good. I don't know how much of a rush I am to watch Dead India, but yeah, Hilda's very good.
Yeah. I've got loads of animated shows that I need to watch, especially on Netflix. There's loads of them I've got.
There was a new series. You mentioned it. Is it Demon Hunter or Demon something? Demon Slayer. The first series of that popped up on Netflix. I thought, I might give that a go. Because I blitzed through bloody Attack on Titan. And, well, I say blitzed through. I've only seen the first series. I should really get the other ones on all the other networks they got going. But yeah. I fucking loved that.
I haven't watched Blood of Zeus. That was another one that looked pretty good. I still haven't watched. I watched the first season, but I haven't watched the rest of Castlevania.
Warren Ellis wrote that, didn't he? Like, is that the Warren Ellis one?
Yeah,
that's Warren Ellis. A lot of that kind of the animation stuff. They're not shy about killing characters off and character death. No. Happens a lot.
Yeah.
You don't have a contract with the actors, I suppose, do you? Well, I suppose you do the voice actors, but they just give them another job and they change your voice a bit. Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, you know, voice acting is—it's such a huge skill.
Piece of piss, though, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Go and stand in that.
But you say that, but it's never more prevalent how much of a skill it is until you're watching one of these animated series and there's a recognised name, and they're voicing a character, and it just doesn't work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It feels like they can't. You know, it comes off really flat.
I wish there was more money put into it, because in the early 2000s, the dubbing of anime was like a lot better. I remember the BBC did, I can't even remember the name of it. It's like an obscure anime with like a alien cat girl in it. But the BBC did it, and it was Lauren Laverne voiced the cat girl, and the other half from Little Britain, what's his name? George Dawes.
Matt Lucas.
Yeah. Matt Lucas, yeah, he voiced the character. And it was like sort of like big top talent BBC people like voicing an anime, and it was genuinely funny. It was genuinely great stuff. And it just goes to show that there would be good. Like, think back to the like Danger Mouse days and Count Duckula with David Jason voicing it stuff. It's, you know, quite a few big name actors do the voice acting on cartoons still, I think.
But they can do the Ghibli stuff, didn't they, like the big names?
Was
it Jason Vanderbeek was in, was that Laputa or one of them?
Hang on.
And what about any
big names?
And then I know, that's just, then you brought just up Dawson.
Because
Patrick Stewart within Nausicaa.
There you go.
We put on Princess Mononoke, and it had, that's Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, and I know,
Too many voices.
How's, is it Flying Castle or Floating Castle?
Moving Castle.
Moving Castle. That's Christian Bale does one of the voices in that, doesn't it? I think.
That's money for our rope, though, doing voiceovers, isn't it? I just offend all the voiceovers.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah. it's not.
I had some interaction with a voiceover artist this week. I hired one to do a bit of work for me. And I said, yeah, it's fine. No worries. They gave me the job and I signed it off. And then I listened to it and I go, they've got one of the names wrong throughout.
Oh, no.
So I don't know if to use
it. Who's the best voice actor I know? Do you know who the best one is? Cliff Cumber.
Yes.
Have you heard that thing he does with John Tucker?
Yeah.
No.
Fucking genius. Have a go to John Tucker's Twitter and listen to it. And I thought, who's that? Is that like Terry Thomas? And it's Cliff.
He'd done the voiceover for the Viper video.
Yeah. Cliff. It's great, isn't
he?
Yeah.
So many links I'm going to put in the show.
This voiceover artist, she reads out something to do with Vanguard, and I can't remember how she says Pendragon, but it's like, did you not read that word?
Pendragon. Pendragon?
Was it Nigella's pronunciation of microwave?
Yes. It's along those lines. I can't remember. The fuck is that word?
Yeah, Nigella's got to be. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, that was obviously a put on. You know, I don't think she's like been hit in the head that hard.
Yeah. With her, it's no matter, does it? Let's face it.
Yeah. But, you know, that's how I call it in my house now, from now on.
Falafel. That's the thing I do as well.
Falafel, that will still make me laugh. And because it's both a food stuff and an elf from Lord of the Rings.
You call it Champagne from Futurama.
Champagne.
Zap Brannigan calls that champagne. Champagne, a bottle of champagne.
and the escargot.
I drink it that much. Yeah. Right.
Oh, dear God. And on
we've
that,
been all over the shop.
We have been all over the shop, but what? How could you not be with Rob Luckett on the show, folks? It's already been hours of entertainment.
That's a good one. That's gone quickly. Look at that.
Yeah. It always passes when you're having fun. Like gas. That's what I did. Topical. This show's topical. Thanks, Rob. Yep. I appreciate that. But do we have...
they know to not laugh at your jokes? Does it empower you?
That's part of the big game with us.
But do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Yes. Can I give a shout-out to...
Yeah, would you like to do some then?
Yes, I would. Can I shout-out to Helena from Art92 for drawing a brilliant picture of Sharknado
so
for me this
good.
Week?
So good.
How good is that? Yeah. If you go to look up Art92 on YouTube and you can watch her draw it, which is very cool. And that was all part of our charity fundraiser. So thanks, Helena. It's very kind of you. We said it at the top of the show, but thanks again to Jason, Dapp and Vince for saying that one of their favourite issues of the year was Atomic Hercules #1. I was over the moon, literally. I was going for a walk and I stopped and just stared at my phone and thought, really? Wow. And that was, over the moon. Thanks, guys. That's mine.
There you go.
Nice.
Awesome. Dan, have you got any?
Yes, I'm going to give a shout out to a Kickstarter, Band of Warriors 1, by Samuel George London and the artist, which I can't, Federico Alvera Corsini. And it's around 1500 BC, is one of the most catastrophic volcanic eruptions in human history, occurred just off the coast of Crete on the island of Santorini. Known as the Minoan eruption, it caused absolute devastation in the immediate area and set the stage for the late Bronze Age collapse.
You seem quite cheerful when you're saying this, Dan, I must say. For something that sounds like an absolutely traumatic event, you're quite cheerful when you're describing it.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not a trained voice actor, so I can't emote.
I'm afraid your wife is dead.
Actual historical events for Celtic and Greek mythology. Band of Warriors is an epic tale of adventure, betrayal, and vengeance that begins by following King Minos at the height of his reign in the palace of Knossos on the island of Crete. Where it will lead, only God knows. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, nice, Dan.
And it's for mature readers only, so check that out.
Yes. Mature readers, not like the immature people that you've experienced.
Yeah, not for immature readers.
Yeah, like us. So there you go, folks. I think it's time to recommend some comics this week, or something for you lovely people to check out in the week ahead. And, as is the way on this show now, the guest goes first. So, Rob, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Do I get one or do I get multiples?
You can have multiples.
Do what you like, man. Yeah.
I'll machine gun some of my buddies' webcomics. Go and read James Lawrence's La Mariposa. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Just amazing artwork. He's, his talent as well disgusts me.
Yep.
Another mate of mine, Rick Worth, writes a magic magician-based comic called Hocus Pocus.
Yes.
That's a great one. I think it won some awards last year in the scene. I think Laura Howell's put up an Etsy as well under Laura Howell Art, and she's selling some like regular show pages and stuff like that. And we love her as well. She's great. Things I've been reading. I've just finished reading Kevin Huizenga's Glen Ganges in the River at Night, which is
It's really good, man. Yeah. Yeah,
it's really... sort of tackles insomnia and sort of where your mind wanders, and he displays it through all like panel layouts and stuff like that. And I think it's crazy to look at, and the way it sort of like reads is it trails off sometimes where the panels go off the page, and that's the way, because I've struggled with insomnia a lot throughout my life, and it is at times lonely because you just sort of, you don't want to wake your partner up, and you're just sort of sat there in the dark going, well, what am I going to do?
Yeah, it's a good one actually. If you can find the original issues of that, because it was a sort of magazine format release.
I've got some of them. Yeah, it was just Ganges, wasn't it?
That's it. They're worth keeping. I think they're beginning to lift up in price in the back issue department. Yeah, they're worth keeping an eye on. Good.
Wow. Well, we haven't had. Yeah, that great books to check out and wonderful creators. Cool. That was very professionally done, Rob.
Almost like I was reading that off of a ransom note. But
we'll say no more. Just let us know if you need us to contact the authorities. Who would like to go next? Dan Butcher. Should we have Dan go next?
Sure. I'll go in. Yeah. I dipped into Comic House this week. Yes. And upon your recommendation, Vince, I read Snake Claws, volume 1.
Hey, nice.
I've not finished 4. It's an obvious real love of martial art films and just the whole thing about it from creator Edison Neo. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's kind of interesting that the main antagonist is sort of the protagonist, as he follow the bad guy and what he gets up to. And he sort of seems outside of the story in a way, like the rest of them are kind of living in this martial arts film, but he's kind of one step above it and knows what they're going to do. And it's really well done, really well observed. And the action sequences are absolutely spot on, really well done. It just gets the whole flavor of what he's going for. I really enjoyed it. And if you've got a Comic House subscription, I'd heartily recommend checking it out. It's such an easy, enjoyable read. So I was just blasting through it.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those things that, I mean, it can be a quick read because it's an action book. And anyone who's created an action book will know that you could put hours and days and weeks into these action scenes. And they're a quick read, aren't they? They can be a quick read. But at the same time, I think with Snake Claws, it deserves a reread, just even if it's just to check out the names of like the action, you know, the martial art move that they use. Oh, I'm so pleased you like that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's like just absolutely untroubled fun throughout.
Yeah,
lots of fun.
And it's definitely someone who knows the genre.
Oh God, yeah.
They
and sort of like little winks and nods to kind of. To stuff even like through the covers, I loved it.
Yeah, I thought I need to correct myself because when I've talked about the books before, Edison I thought was a creator from America. They're actually from Singapore.
Okay.
And he said there will be a trade collecting books 1 to 6, but essentially you can read on. You know, heartily recommend going to Comic House because they're churning out book 5 will be coming very soon. And it's a great point.
Nice.
Yeah,
I'm going to throw a little shade as well. I read Firepower, the trade,
second trade.
Two of that.
Yeah,
second trade. And like, I loved the first one, loved the setting, loved everything about it. But the story in the second book just really lost me.
I feel like it's treading water.
Is it because the one we all talked about was the prequel, wasn't it?
Yeah, the prequel. So it's volume 1. Right, but I feel like it's treading water, man. Funny enough, I got the new issue because I buy the issues as well. That arrived this week, so I haven't read it yet. So I want to see if something happens in it. But it just sort of goes around the houses about, and it's all a bit sort of domestic setting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like the first one's just story moving along, bang, 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 bang. And then the second one seems to want to set up like this kind of a sitcom scenario where you don't think things are going to change, and it's going to, maybe it will, but like, and for the entirety of the book, I was like, oh, when's this going to get moving? And I just, it's kind of weird. It's just absolutely killed any interest in me wanting to read any more of it.
Okay, which you can see I felt reading singles on that, man.
It must have been interminable.
Yeah. It's only that I've got it written on a pull list. If I was going in the shop and buying it off the shelf, I probably would have reconsidered by now. If not for Sam Lee's art, I think Sam Lee's art, yeah.
Yeah, I think it absolutely elevates it.
I find that fascinating. I do find it fascinating that, you know, the prequel book was such a breath of fresh air, and it's certainly
one of our favourite books of the year.
And it, you know, all of us were just sort of like, this is amazing, looking forward to what's coming next. And I find that very fascinating that when it came to the second album, as it were, it didn't deliver. I think, you know, is that down to what the prequel book did? Is it, you know, how would the book
there's be? A return. There's a return. They're trying to get him to return, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's various people and sides involved in this. And there's the hint that the dragon is real, which, you know, continues from the first book. But it's done in, is it LA? I can't remember where it's set now, Dan.
I can't remember.
An American city of some kind. And it's just a whole trade of that, really, what I just told you. And people come in from the past and new people have arrived to sort of, it's a very slow burn. But then again, Kirkman does that, doesn't he? That's what he does. I mean, look at The Walking Dead, Christ, we had whole years where, but, you know.
It feels like that's most does, like modern comics a lot of the time. They enter their treading water phase and they're just sort of
decompressing. Yeah.
Well, you shouldn't be doing that, like, if the initial book was the prequel and this is like the main story, as it were, and it's all set up, surely this is the bit where you should have all the investment of like, right, I know where this is going.
Is it slow the main character? Is it slow from issue one? Because surely issue one, you've got to come out all guns blazing, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much. They drop you into a year later or something. I can't remember now.
It's a couple of years later. He's got kids.
Do you need to have read the prequel to read this?
You do, yeah, because you've got to understand what the reason is.
That's a failing.
It could turn into an absolutely amazing book, but I think that's a failing for me. If you've got to have read an OGN that came before it and your issue one of a new series, you need to have read that. You don't necessarily... That's not right for me.
How did the floppies exist?
Sorry, mate?
So at that point, I think I often think about the market, and I know obviously everyone has pull lists and stuff like that, but if you've got an issue out and it's just people talking in a house and someone's, you know, shelf browsing, obviously it doesn't happen as much at the moment, but like, I don't know, like if there's nothing happening in your issue to issue... Sometimes a bit of a hard sell.
And I suspect comics will sell. These comics will sell firstly because it's Kirkman, and secondly because it's Samnee, and probably living off the benefit of this. I mean, I'm hoping that the third trade, it does make it look like it's going to get going again. Mm. Whether it does or not, I know it's not a switch and bait thing, but I don't know.
It's hard because like the main character's got a family. He's got like a young son and daughter and a wife, and it's like, how do you go on a world-spanning adventure without... Because how much jeopardy can there be without the kids getting killed at some point? Do you know what I mean? God,
especially if they're annoying.
Kirkman's writing it. My lord.
Because they get sent like these martial arts assassins after him. And it's like, well, this is going to go wrong. Yeah. Also, the main character, like he kind of... In the whole first book, he's working on getting this power and no one's had it. And he gets it of like been able to fire a fireball. And in the next comics, he's firing them off fucking all the time, like it's like nothing special. And it's like, well, a martial art guy that can fire fireballs are just
yeah, he needs to develop some kind of skill. I don't know where I came up with this, where he fires things out of his ass.
It's like, if he can, the dude can fire fireballs, everyone should be like, holy fuck, this dude can fire fireballs.
Not to toot my own horn, but there's power locks in Bumstorm where if he's not eating enough beans, nothing's coming out.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
He's a bit blocked up.
He could, like, someone could give him like a load of like egg omelette before a tournament. He's like, oh no, I've got to kind of work through this.
Need the cabbage.
Oh God. Kirkman, if you're listening to this.
Well, that's probably how Kirkman came up with it, lighting some farts, bored on a Sunday afternoon.
Kirkman, step off. Stay away from farts.
Yeah, exactly. Listen.
Stay in your lane, Kirkman.
Gauntlet thrown down.
I love Invincible, so like, I'm not going to crap on Kirkman.
Speaking of an anime, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's got an anime.
Yeah. Have you seen the clip of it, Dan?
Yeah.
That's going around. I mean, it's got grade A voice cast, but I know you're probably, because it's very close to your heart, isn't it, that comic series?
Leave or take animated series like that. I just see them as completely separate entities to what the books are.
And... It's a different beast.
Yeah.
It's like, there's an Avengers cartoon, but I never watch it. But I love the Avengers, you know. So.
Yeah.
There was one good one. It was Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And
that was a good one.
They cancelled it because Jeff Loeb said kids can't understand ongoing plot lines.
Oh, fuck off. Sorry.
That's some stupid talk.
Yeah, that's some watered down nonsense, Jeff. Yeah.
Come on. Who's next?
Right,
who's
next
with their...
I'll go next. I've got one from Antarctic Press.
Yes.
Ooh.
Remember them? That's an indie publisher.
I used to read Gold Digger a lot.
Yeah, still going, you know. It's issue 170 or something, yeah.
Is that Fred?
Fred Perry, He's another talented mofo, because he made an animated series himself of Gold Digger, like a one-off OVA. Yeah, he animated it himself. It was nuts. Kind of made me wanted to get into animation until I realized, no, that's too much work.
It's too much work. It's loads of work. Now, Antarctic Press have all sorts of titles on there. This one caught my eye, partly because of a nice, big, bold header at the top. Nicely designed header. And this is Offworld. There are 7 issues of it. This was on my Comixology browse, as always, trying to discover an indie gem. And there's 7 issues. Every single one is 79p. And basically, this is it's a sci-fi double feature comic. Mature readers. And it's two sci-fi stories in one double comic. Now, well, at first when I read sci-fi double feature, what does that mean? Is it going to be a different story every issue? How's that going to work? Basically, this is two comics, and like, it's the first half of the book is one story, and the second half of the book is another story. And each issue is about 33 pages. It does change towards the end. Like, I think issue 6 is focused on. One story gets an entire issue to itself and vice versa. But basically, there's two stories in this called one Interstellar Dust by CJ Hudson and Igor Volsky, and Hazel by MLS Weech and Colin Fogel. Now, Interstellar Dust is about an intergalactic prison transport vessel that breaks down, and basically the crew and there's some criminals who have to try and survive when a riot kicks off in deep space. And Hazel is basically about the central character who's the newest member of almost like a SWAT team, like a proper sort of manga anime sort of SWAT team, you know, proper cool gear with like a skull. It looks like they're painted on their mask and stuff. And as her team sort of begins their mission to shut down like a gang, there's all sorts of stuff that kicks off. Now, it's an interesting one for me because I've read all 7 issues, and it was one of those I bought a couple because they were 79p. It's you know, that's a nonsense price for digital.
Yeah.
And it's all full color. And once again, I looked at the previews, and the preview pages were of Interstellar Dust, and I absolutely fucking love Interstellar Dust. It's so good. It's funny. It's over the top. It's definitely not safe for work in some sort of ways, because they are. It's about a bunch of criminals, and all kinds of aliens. You know, it's got the classic sort of. There's an artist who's got the chops to do a Mos Eisley cantina, but over an entire space station. Do you know what I mean? You know, where there's different races and there's robots, and there's all kinds. I think I showed a couple of pages to the guys a few weeks ago on WhatsApp.
Yep.
Igor is the illustrator and colorist, because it's such beautiful sort of line work, and it's sort of reminiscent in some ways of, and the name has just escaped me, Cowboy Samurai. What is it? Hard Boiled.
Jeff Darrow.
I can't believe that name escaped me. But you know, when that there's not so much shadows and shading, there's just detail. Do you know what I mean? Wonderful clean line work, and you know, and the colours are sort of bright, basic but bright. There's all kinds of things going on. There's interesting sort of ideas, the little sci-fi details that are going out throughout. For instance, one little touch, I like the little touches that they put in sci-fi stories. There's one of the main characters in a flashback, he's sat by his window in his apartment complex, and he's just smoking a cigarette, and for all intents and purposes it looks like a normal glass window, but then when he wants to flick his cigarette, he just puts his hand through the window as if it's like a, it's basically like a holographic window, and flicks it out. For some reason I was like, that's a nice little touch. It's not actually part of the story because he's having dialogue at the same time, but it's those sort of details that always get me. But it's genuinely laugh out loud funny. It can be brutal. There's some interesting characters. I know there's going to be a second arc on the way, because I immediately sort of followed a CJ on Twitter just to be like, who is this writer that seems to have, you know, I've talked about it many times on the show, that when I read a comic that just immediately clicks with me, like an Outer Darkness sort of thing, that there's something about the way it's written and the voices of the characters that immediately put me in that. It just hits me on a certain level, and I'm like, the writing of this is just so well done. And you put it together with the beautiful art, and it was like, mwah, chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. I absolutely loved it. And it ends on a... I found myself caring about the characters, even though some of them are absolute bastards, and some of them don't end well. So I absolutely loved Interstellar Dust. Hazel itself, it's decent. I did enjoy it. I wasn't sort of reading one story and then thinking, oh, I'll just skip the other one. I read both stories every time. It wasn't so much for me, Hazel, but I cannot knock the craft of what it is. And I think certainly that there's a lot of it in the designs of the armors, and I don't know, it reminded me of something, and I'm not sure what it is. And I think, I'll have to ask Dan and Tony if they've seen something like this. I've seen these sort of designs. It's reminiscent of something somewhere before. That has a very sort of more sort of animated kind of feel. It's still quite a mature story. There's lots of violence and different sort of plots going on, different characters. But for me, Interstellar was the one that grabbed me. And I think it's the nature of the anthology, isn't it, really? You know,
That's the thing, isn't it?
I'm going to be following it. If there's a second series of this off-world, I'm immediately going to buy the second volume. I'm going to start buying the second volume. Because I was half expecting as well. When I bought issue one, I thought, issue one, 79p. Oh, the new issue's come out. I bet the new issue's going to be like £3, isn't it? You know how it is? The latest one is expensive. But no, they're all 79p.
They're a strange company, aren't they? Not everything's perfect out of Antarctic Press. I'm sure they'll agree. But there's the odd thing that comes out. You go, oh, I quite like that. That's all right.
This completely sort of caught me left field. I mean, issue one didn't necessarily have the most... I mean, it's Volsky's cover is beautiful. And all the covers are nice, but issue one didn't necessarily have the most striking issue one cover, if that makes sense.
Okay.
It's a beautiful piece, but it's almost like a panel of the book itself.
Okay.
Whereas you open up the pages and it shines, absolutely shines. Off-world, worth checking out. If you like your comics digitally, definitely grab hold of it. And I would buy a collection of this story as well, because I absolutely loved it. So that's my one. And I've been meaning to talk about this for a couple of weeks, but I've been reading a lot. You know, I've read a lot of good comics, so I'm trying to pick out weeks to talk about the comics and hope I don't read something else amazing, because I'm running out. Because I wanted to give this one a bit of time rather than just sort of saying I read this and it's good.
Yeah,
cool.
Speaking of which, Tony,
mine's an anthology as well. So the reason I came, it's slightly older, this book, and I didn't realise that until I just looked at it about an hour ago. But I bought this because I think we've all probably had the email from Avery Hill talking about the new books they've got coming. Have you seen that? And it's the sort of slate for the rest of the year. And they've got a book out of that's done by a person called Lord Hurk, H-U-R-K, or just Hurk. And I thought, oh, I like the cover of that. That looks really interesting. I'll go and have a little Google and see if I can find what else they've done. And I bought this, and it's called Affordable Amazement Catalogue, and it's an anthology. The book that Herc has got coming out of Avery Hill is called Jinx Freeze, which looks really good, so very interesting. Affordable Amazement Catalogue is from 2015, and it's got a sort of a Clausian. I showed you it, didn't I, V?
Yeah.
It's got a sort of Clausian cover. It looks like a sort of blonde version of someone like Jonathan Ross holding a sort of a turd in his hand, and surrounded by sort of a Warholian like frame to it. It looks nuts. So I thought, oh, I'll have that. Have a look at that. I'll have that. It looks like something Fantagraphics would have brought out years ago. It's got that sort of quality to it, you know. I thought I'll have a look at that, and Herc has got a strip, and it's only a four-pager, and it's called Wet Grip and Hamwich, and it's about a couple of sort of fucked-up detectives by way of Hunter S. Thompson, and they're sitting in a car, and it's all a bit unclear because it's all a bit nuts, but they investigate a crime that involves something to do with their own doppelgangers, and there's a line that made me laugh. You'll always be the bare-knuckle karaoke champ to me, Wet Grip. there's also some sort of humanoid... possibly dead crosses, humanoid crossed with duck-billed platypuses, who have all been killed by a tanning bed. Having read these sort of just these four pages, I'm quite keen now to get hold of anything else done by Hurk, because it's really interesting. There's a fucking really strange weirdness to it that is probably somewhere around the same sort of thing we got with Ryan Heschke, who did Mean Girls. Maybe some Spain Rodriguez, maybe some Clausian stuff.
Wow.
Just very, very strange. I won't do all the stories in there, but another one that made me laugh was Onk's Roach Replica, which is a story of what happens when Don Cannelloni throws an Onyx Roach Replica out of the apartment window in anger whilst farting. So copyright there, Rob, have a word with them.
Hate to hear about it.
Yeah, sad day. It causes a chain of events that send a bizarrely twisted version of Piglet, you know, Piglet from Winnie the Pooh. Yes. This thing looks like fucking Piglet on an adventure. It causes a stampede of elephants, and a man who looks a bit like a dog-headed man is crushed under a collapsing building. Just really lovely. Done by the creator, Tobias Tack is the name of the person who created that one. And I have to say, it really feels a bit like a cross between something by maybe Stephen Appleby and a love letter to Jim Woodring. It's got that sort of strange, I mean, anything anywhere in that region is going to be fucking weird, isn't it? But it's very accomplished. A lot of it is done wordless, which I kind of like for this sort of strangeness. It's a seven pager. And then the other one I'm going to mention is by our old buddy Paul Ashley Brown, who we know from Bambi, don't we?
Yeah.
He's a top boy. And he's just done us something for Tribute Press, actually, which I'm over the moon at, which I haven't revealed yet, but it's coming out soon.
Ooh.
It's called Life Drawing Class, and it's told in first person. It's about an artist who he's accomplished, he's, you know, capable, but he wishes to grow as an artist. So he discovers this creepy life drawing class, and he goes along. And in this class is just him, a teacher who looks like something out of, you know, a Tolstoy sort of teacher. You know, it's like a Russian, you know, sort of glass wearing teacher, like a little gym, you know, goatee. And he starts drawing, and it's really weird because it feels like the woman who he's drawing is kept captive for the drawing. And it just gets very strange. And the real world and the artistic world, or the artistic interpretation of the world, begins to mesh together in some clever ways. I won't spoil, because I think it's worth a read. This is really good. Okay. Paul's got a great sense of black and white. I really do like his black and white stuff. There's a real sort of sharpness to his images, and this is all told in first person, which I really like first person stories. I don't know why. I like that sort of narration thing that goes on. There's a feel of it. It's almost like an underground comic crossed with a twist in the tale that you would get in, you know, on television, you get in The Outer Limits, or on comics, you'd get in Creepshow, you know, Creepy or Eerie or something, you know, so that sort of thing, that sort of feeling to it. I think it's probably my favorite, actually, my favorite in the issue. Really good. This is published by Fancy Butcher Press. Now, before I realized that this was from... Before I realized that this was from 2015, in the back they've got all these the addresses, the websites of all the artists and creators. And I thought, I'm going to go through them and buy something off each of them because they're all really good. And a load of them were out of date. And I thought, why is this? What am I? Is something up with my computer or my internet down or something? And it's only later that I realized that they're out of date. But I don't know whether Fancy Butcher Press is still operating. They haven't tweeted anything for about 5 months or so, I think. So I don't know. But it's at Fancy Butcher on Twitter. There's in the inside of each cover, there's like silly adverts. So you can buy an inflatable coffin for $9.99. You can buy an easy lift spoon, 75% lighter handle, great for the very frail. You can buy assorted salty euphemisms. You can buy a Prince Charles butt plug.
Jesus Christ.
Replacement cock springs for manual pump. Or Clockwork Actions, 3 for £1, and there's loads of them. That's not even half of them. That's not even a third of them. Fun spy nose, portable love detector, radio, the original rodeo shaped reading glasses. It's just full of just little Easter eggs like that. It is really good. There's quite a few other strips by people. There's something by somebody called Chanik, Tanya Meditsky, and Paul O'Connell also have strips in here. But yeah, I highly recommend it. If you want to get a copy, I think probably the easiest way is go to Lord Herc. So LORDHURK, LordHurk.com, and you can get a copy of it. But I really liked it. It's only £4. And it's a good... It's about the size of The Hall Chronicles, I suppose. It's about that sort of size.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Yeah, so pretty good.
That sounds great.
Yeah. that's my one, guys. There you go.
Nice. So lots of amazing creators and comics to check out this week. Lots of different kind of stuff, from martial arts to farts or
Farshal arts.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. That's why we have the guests, because we can't talk properly at this time of night. But we hope you enjoyed this very highbrow, grown-up conversation piece that will certainly get the internet buzzing when it
I think we're going to win an award for this show. I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, put this forward for the award show.
This is it. This is the one. This is the one where all of us.
We're all going to get Netflixes.
Yeah, they're going to come calling. Yeah. They're going to make plays out of this show. That's how highbrow it's going to be. But if you think that's a load of old bollocks, you can let us know via email, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Please follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod, where we will be announcing the latest guests, asking the community for their thoughts and feelings and anything else that we can think of.
Oh, God, please no.
Recriminations.
Yeah. Oh, God, no. We have files. We have evidence on everyone that follows this show. No, we don't. That's too much like hard work.
Just John Ottaway.
I won't even put in a beep noise for some of the swearing these days. That's how lazy I am. However, if you want to go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, you'll see that we post up the latest episodes there, and you can comment and join in the conversation, which is flying about all the time in the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. There's a wonderful community of people who just love comics and making comics and talking about comics.
Got Sank in the shout out about the group. We've got the self-portrait thread going up on Monday the 25th.
Yep.
There you go. So as we speak now, there is a self-portrait art thread which is live, and I mean, there's already some artwork already in there, which is fantastic, but it's just going to be added to. And definitely, if you're a budding artist, actually, you don't even have to be a budding artist. If you just want to have some fun,
just try your hand.
There's loads of stuff happening there all the time, much like the drinking draws, of which there will be one coming soon, which will be announced on there as well. And Tom Curry's an admin on that group as well, so he's the most grown up one.
Watch your P's and Q's.
Yeah,
I've got the idea for the next drawing thing, and I've run it past you guys, and you gave me the thumbs up. So we're going to go with that.
We're going to announce that next week, are we?
Yeah, next week.
Cool. So look forward to that, because they are fun. It's great stuff. And also, just sometimes you can take these and just enter the drink and draw and just do that for your drink and draw. You know, if you can't think of what to draw, or if you're not working on a comic or whatever. It's just awesome. Much like the people that are part of those groups. And thank you for listening to this episode, whether it is on awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe and leave a review. It feeds our very fragile egos and helps get the word out about the show. And people to discover all the types of comics that we talk about every week. We're also on other networks like Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other ones are we on, Tony?
We're on a bit of a list, actually. Do you mind if I read them all out? It'll only take a second.
Here we go.
Clitoris All Sorts, Growler Prowler, Fantastic, Minjin Bracket, Shit Nuts, AIDS, Turkish Rim Job, Your Mum's Shit, Shit Mum, Harold Shit Mum, Long Dong Silver, Quimmy Savile, Bone Alone, Michael Parking Bum.
Highbrow.
Was there one called AIDS?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, normally I do not ask for this, but we need context to that. What's the context of that? Where have you got that?
They're all different podcast networks. No, it's come from the outtakes on This Life. Is it this? What's it? No, it's not. What's it called? Afterlife.
Afterlife.
Yeah. I did take the one out with the C bomb in it.
Thank you, Tony. Yeah. You left in my favourite. I'm not going to say what do you think my favourite one is. Well, let's get the discussion going. but until then, we can make a competition out of it. No, but until then, where can people find us on our comics online, etc. Tony,
neverironanything.com. Three posts gone up this weekend. Go and have a look. If you've got a comic you want reviewing, send it through to me.
Nice.
Honest review.
Yeah. None more honest than our Tony.
Yeah, constructively Vanguard. Honest as well.
Yeah, not just kind of fawning, but...
Yeah.
Vanguard starts for the proper pages this week on Wednesday and Friday.
Yeah.
So I've given Tony and Vince a sneak peek at what's coming up. I've put more work into these. If that's possible.
There's
it's more.
Looking amazing, mate. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
It's hard to kind of describe, but like I usually do like 3 or 4 levels of shade, and this one's got a couple more added on. So it takes more time to make pages, but it looks better.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And check that out.
There's no way you could ever look any better, Dan.
Oh, thanks, Lee.
Yeah.
It's true, but yeah, thanks. To be fair, I could get a haircut. That would make me look a lot better.
Oh, Dan, the flowing locks. Just let it
long hair's coming back in.
Yep. I look like that, like someone you'd fucking see like in the 90s rave scene.
So, like, for a second there, I thought you said someone you fuck and see. That's what I thought you said there for a second. I thought, what's that?
I don't want to rule that out.
That's the dream.
Yeah. Like a perv.
The dream is to says, live fuck the dream. And see.
Well, you don't just have sex in the pitch black, just so you know. Well, nothing but shame.
Don't say that to Tony, because that's how he's been living his life.
That's a hole in the wall normally.
Do you know what? The childish part of me wants to continue this conversation further. But you can find me on social media at Jester Diablo, where I'll be waffling about something or posting pictures about my cats who want to go outside and it's too cold, so they're not allowed. But Rob, thank you. You've been a star this week. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Rob.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff.
It was once again, where can people find you and Bumstorm and all your work?
So I'm Rob Luckett on pretty much all the socials, Twitter, Instagram. I don't tweet too much. I don't like tweet everything I do. So I'm not going to annoy you in that way.
That's what you gotta do.
And you know what? Be brave. Google Bumstorm.
Yeah.
Yes. That'll be the sign off for this week. Instead of Stay Awesome, we should all just say Google Bumstorm. That would be the best sign off ever. So speaking of which,
I'm game.
Yeah, let's do it.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Go forth wherever you are. We hope you're happy, healthy, and doing okay, whether it be because of the cold weather or anything else and all the other craziness. My cat is actually meowing at me. He obviously can you hear him in the background?
No,
we need to shit.
Yeah, he probably does, which is topical. So he's going to join in at the end when we do the sign off. But wherever you are, thank you very much for listening. Go forth, read loads of comics. And from Dan, Tony, Rob and myself, have a brilliant week. And what should they do, guys?
Google
Bumstorm. Bumstorm.
I tell you what, perfect. We've done that fucking better perfect. Than the actual proper sign-off. Amazing.
What do you mean? It's always brilliant.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. I just describe myself as a creative mercenary at this point because I just sort of, if there's money, I'll do it, but not sex stuff.
Oh, why do we invite him on?
Oh, shame. You
know, give it a couple more months.
Yeah. When contacts are allowed back again, we'll see if we add that to my bow.
Underhand, overhand. That's what I like.
He's not a womble.
Fucking hell, Tony.
What is Tony doing now?
That. I just googled that woman.
Yeah, she didn't really look like her. I just like to say she did.
I was going
to
say.
Why do you Google everything on this show? That's a very dangerous thing to do.
It's dangerous.
Oh, especially this week, you know, with Bumstorm and
everything. Yeah,
I'm always worried about that. I'm always worried that someone's just, like I say, like, you know, you don't want to just reel off a web address to someone in person or whatever. So you say, like, just Google Bumstorm and I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And then we just sign off and then have a Horlicks and go to bed. Not all together,
no, not that.
Not yet, but that date will come.
Hands, face, space.
Top and tail.
Ass to mouth. No.
This is the effect, I'm afraid. It's you know, literally just the title of the comic alone, and it's sort of like we're off the rails. So we had Mockbang last week, which, you know, I listened to it and you were like, I thought it was, you know, you were thinking, what does that title mean? And I definitely thought it was like, you know, a finger move.
Yeah. Yeah, a backdoor finger move. The next week we've got the creator of Shit Piss Fuck 2 on.
Why not? That, all the way, you know.
Yeah. All the way from Bang, Bumstorm, then Shit Piss Fuck 2. What was that?
That was just me. I was just
verbal exercises.
P5 fo fum.
Come on, let's get going.
Yeah, this is bad. Right, okay.